On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Cory Booker was a Rhodes Scholar, Stanford football star, Yale Law School grad, black, and 32 years old when he ran for mayor of Newark, New Jersey in 2002. His opponents, supporters of old-school black incumbent Sharp James, called him a carpetbagger. They called him a closet Republican. They called him Jewish and gay and uppity and not black enough. They called him white. Booker lost. Now he's running again. The election is in less than a month. Polls say he's a winner. His prize would be one of the poorest cities in the country. And now the word is Cory Booker is a hero, that he'll one day be the first black president of the United States. Up next on Point, Make Room, Obama. We're talking with Cory Booker. We begin first in Newark with Damian Cave, who's been covering the mayoral race there for the New York Times. Damian, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, happy to be here.
I'm looking at a poll here that puts Cory Booker 43 points up over his opponent, State Senator Ronald L. Rice. Is it a shoo-in at this point?
It's beginning to look that way. Cory has really put together a strong campaign organization. Even before the mayor dropped out, it looked like it was going to be a very close race if the mayor won. And with the mayor delaying until the last second just a couple weeks ago before dropping out, it really put Cory in a very strong position. So it does indeed look like come May 9th, he will win. It's just a question of how much by how much. And as always, no one wants to completely second-guess this. It's possible that Rice could pull this out. Polls in urban cities are often, in some cases, less accurate than they are in other places.
Damian, take us back to 2002 and what really happened there. We heard some of the sound from that race when Sharp James said, and his people said, this is a carpetbagger, this is an uppity black man, barely even black. Is that what won him the election?
Well, I think that Newark is a city that really values loyalty. And there's a sense here among many people that most of the sort of white suburban and, you know, wealthier folks left in the 60s and left them to their own devices. So why should we trust someone from the outside when they're the ones who abandoned us and made things really difficult 20 years ago? So there's a sense, a really deeply ingrained sense of distrust that the mayor played on. And while the way that he did it was in many ways offensive to a lot of folks here in Newark, for some people, even though it was over the top, it rang somewhat true to them that they were skeptical of someone from outside. And in the end, the mayor's machine and the mayor's, you know, emotional pleas like that worked.
Remind us of Newark's particular history, the 1967 riots and the impact on that city.
Well, you're right. I mean, in 1967, there was a black cab driver was arrested and beaten and was rumored to have been killed by the white police. And this exploded into a riot that left the city, you know, burning for several days. It brought in the National Guard. And ever since then, the city has, that moment has been something that it's been very difficult for the city to forget. Sharp James pushed the city forward over the past 20 years, and he was always a major booster, and so to a certain extent, he helped bring the city beyond that. But even when push came to shove with Cory Booker, he returned to some of the same tropes of that era, which was a very racialized mentality, a very strong sense of us versus them, and it's something that the city is still trying to overcome, not just politically, but also economically. I mean, this is a city where, you know, roughly 45% of those who are among the labor force are not in the active labor force. Unemployment is twice the state average. The median income is $26,000 a year, roughly, which is, you know, half the state average. It's really a particularly poor, difficult city, and at the same time, crime is on the rise, despite having gone down in the 80s and 90s. The murder rate has gone up, while other crimes have sort of gone down. So it's a mix. The city is in a tough spot still. Even as the downtown is thriving, there's a new performing arts center here, a lot of new businesses have returned, but it hasn't quite extended into the neighborhoods that were devastated by the riots in 67 and beyond.
Poorer than any other American city except Miami, and a bigger reputation for poverty. What is the message of Cory Booker that's come into this scene?
Well, I mean, Cory really focuses much more on efficiency. His idea is that he's going to come in and make this government transparent. He's going to make it work for the citizens, and he's going to make the city work for the citizens. I mean, that's his focus. And this is radically different from people like Sharp James, who came of age, you know, in the 60s, and for whom empathy and race and these issues that were much more emotional were what propelled him to power. Sharp James is the guy who's out at every community event shaking hands and getting people jobs, and this is how he's run the city. Corey is much more focused on, you know, numbers and processes and policies. He's much more, wonkish, to both his credit and some argue his detriment.
And I should say, Shout Magazine, all the way back in 2002, cover, the Cory Booker, the first black president of the United States, was the headline with a question mark. Is this a young politician headed into the Obama ranks?
He has clearly become more sophisticated and much more on a national level in this election compared to, say, 2002. The way he's running his campaign, the way he speaks from the stump, he is clearly becoming possibly that person. I mean, I think he still faces a lot of challenges. Newark is a very difficult place to run. To a certain extent, it's a lot easier to be a senator than it is to run a city like Newark. So we'll see how he does. I think that he'll be under the microscope because he's attracted so much national attention. And the question will be, how much does Newark want to let Cory Booker change its culture? How much does Cory Booker, how much can Cory Booker change in a city like this that has so many entrenched problems? So we'll see what he does.
Damian, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Damian Cave has been covering Newark's mayoral race for the New York Times. He spoke with me from Newark, New Jersey. Joining me now is Cory Booker, current front runner in Newark's May 9th mayoral race. From 1998 to 2002, Booker served as city councilman in Newark. He's attracted national attention for his youth, for a style called Clintonian, for his Rhodes Scholar credentials, and for growing up black in a white New Jersey suburb, then devoting his career to Newark and its problems. He joins us from Newark. Cory Booker, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
How's the race going?
It's going well. You know, we've been working at this now for a couple years, getting in people's living rooms, communicating a message, going through a very pragmatic approach to dealing with our challenges, and we've been reaping the benefits. Even before Sharp James stepped out, we were ahead of him in the polls, and I think people are really starting to respond to the idea of hope, that this city can be achieving so much more if we had the right leadership and the right community, really collective action behind it.
You had a brass-knuckled race last time. Are your opponents still calling you white?
If that was all they were calling me, it would be a good day. I've been hearing quite the breath of attacks. The politics of personal destruction is alive and well, unfortunately. But we've been doing a good job this time, unlike last time, is keeping people focused on the issues about how do you really drive down crime? What are the examples in other cities that have worked that we're not doing in Newark? How do you really empower your youth and your young people to take part in a 21st century economy? And how do you make this economy in Newark actually work for the people that live here? So we've been able to keep people focused on issues much more than the last campaign when they were distracted by the brass-knuckle racial politics that went on before.
We're going to look at those issues in Newark and beyond, but what about it? As a black candidate, did your credentials, Stanford, Yale Law School, Rhodes Scholar, did they hurt you or help you in your first race for mayor?
I think a lot of people sell urban black communities short. There is an understanding in Newark, like across America, that education matters, that preparation matters, and children, parents want for their children to succeed.
Are you running as black first and everything else after that? Is that still necessary in a city like Newark? Are we in a new day there or not?
I think it's unavoidable to look at me and see my race, but we're really trying to put a campaign of inclusion. Our slogan is every person counts. And that's what really this is about. I mean, Newark is becoming a deliciously diverse community, even within the black community. You've got African immigrants, Haitian immigrants, Dominican immigrants, Brazilian immigrants, all who are African American. So we are really looking to reach out to everyone, from Latinos to blacks to the white community here, because it's going to take all of us to be successful. Golda Meir, the Israeli leader, had a saying where she said, Jews together are strong, but Jews with other people are invincible. And we need that invincibility in Newark. We need to pull every sector together if we're going to really meet these challenges we face.
The movie Street Fight showed a really brass-knuckled race in 2002. It was tough. You used some tough language, too. Fascist, dictator for Sharp James. How bad did it get?
It got pretty bad. I mean, you would literally see situations where city employees would talk to me and lose their jobs or be suspended. We had situations where people who were in public housing were threatened with the loss of their public housing. We were kicked out of numerous places. People who supported us would have their businesses raided the next day. It was a pretty draconian force that we fought. And it's unfortunate. But we're going to try to do a lot of things, should we win, to change that and to put laws in place so that even the best-hearted people who come in won't be tempted to use those tactics again.
What do you think about the comparisons between yourself and Barack Obama? We heard Damian Cave say there that it's easier to be a United States senator than mayor of Newark. But you know what people are pointing to in that kind of contrast? Articulate, well-educated, a big, bright future, perhaps. What do you think of the comparison?
Well, I always laugh, and I told Barack the story when I was at the convention as a Democratic delegate. I was going into the convention hall the day after he gave the speech, and I had this cluster of people run over to me and say, "Oh, you are so fantastic." And I said, "I wouldn't go that far." "Oh, you're so great. You should be the vice presidential candidate." And I said, "Oh, please, please, thank you. That's great." And then the woman pulls out her camera and says, "Mr. Obama, can I take your picture?" And I, without missing a beat, I said, "Ma'am, there's more than one sexy black man at this convention." But the reality is the comparisons are out there. There's a whole group of new black leaders emerging from the Harold Fords to the Arthur Davises who are coming about, who all have an opportunity not to copy each other, but to hopefully deal with some of the persistent problems that still endure in America that we have not addressed as a nation. And we can never truly claim that we have achieved ourselves as a country until the principles and ideals that we so proudly proclaim are real for everyone in our country.
You've got a golden tongue. We salute it. You still live in the Housing Project. We salute that for an urban politician. But what do you really do? Sharp James oversaw all kinds of building in Newark. You've got a new performing arts center. You've got a new downtown arena coming up for the New Jersey Devils hockey team, new housing and a minor league baseball park. What are you going to do that he didn't?
Well, you know, bricks and mortar are not as important as flesh and blood and quality of life issues.
What does that mean?
You know, most measures of Newark's success, we still are a city that can accomplish much more, whether it's crime and violence, whether it's median income, whether it's accomplishments in school, public education. So we have a lot of challenges faced on all areas of life. And housing is nice, but we've actually destroyed more low-income housing than we've built in the city of Newark. An arena sounds like a great idea, but when you're using over $300 million of public money, when you have urgent needs in neighborhoods, we cannot be a city that has a place for professional athletes to play in the downtown and our children don't have safe places to play in the neighborhood. So we're going to be really focused on building a quality of life for Newark residents, for ensuring safety and security first, for empowering our children to succeed, and to making sure that we could use a lot of the best things that are happening in this 21st century economy to use them to empower a local community.
How do you do that? So far, haven't they worked against you? Jobs going abroad that might have been there in Newark. It was once a manufacturing center of the world. I mean, nuts and bolts here.
Let's talk about nuts and bolts, because you have to have an agenda for economic empowerment in Newark and New Jersey and, frankly, our nation. We cannot have such persistent pockets of poverty.
So what does that
mean? Some practical things you can do right off the bat. Number one, educate your children and prepare them to compete. And we can give them more skills. And not even just skills to go on to college. We've already been talking and meeting with unions from around the state who are involved in a lot of this construction. We turned to one major union in the state and said, "How many children from Newark did you have in your apprenticeship program this year?" And they said, "None." So we have to make sure we're opening doors to real training and skills in the city of Newark.
Everybody says educate the kids. How do you do it? You're for school vouchers. Am I right?
Well, I'm not for school vouchers whole scale. I do not think we should be privatizing education or doing things that will undermine. I'm in favor of programs that provide scholarships for poor kids trapped in failing schools. I'm for providing parents with choices amongst excellent and not having to choose between bad options.
Sounds good, but is that a backdoor to school vouchers? How do you change it on a broad scale, not just this child and that child with a scholarship, but everybody's facing this?
You change it on a broad scale by looking at what some of the great educational innovators are doing in America right now, whether you see some of the things that Joe Klein and Bloomberg are doing in New York, Paul Vallis in Philadelphia, Arnie Duncan and under Daly in Chicago. They're really doing basic bare bones knuckles, pushing, ending bureaucracies that chew up so much of our per pupil expenditure. They're pushing down responsibility and accountability to schools. They're taking failing schools and disbanding them and resurrecting them as new entities.
Is the teachers' union against you, Mr. Booker?
The teachers union has been against me for a while. because we have the courage to really stand up and say the system as it stands right now is not working. We have hundreds of teachers that have rallied around us in this campaign because they know that they're desperate for reform. So economic empowerment starts with education, but then there's other things, focusing on real minority business development. In our city, we outsource almost 80% of our city contracts, or more than 80% of our city contracts, to businesses outside of our city. We've done nothing to create business incubators, helping people with bonding capacity, giving them access to technical expertise so we can build minority businesses in Newark. We have programs right now that aren't working that should work, whether it's working with our children to help them with learning about the economy and how economics work. We unveiled a program that I did through a nonprofit that we're going to expand when I'm mayor that's really focused about helping people understand the power of their own money, whether it's the laws of compound interest or just the power of investing. We started this year with something called Families Realizing Economic Empowerment. We taught a number of families about government programs that aren't being used many ways in inner cities, about the earned income tax credit, and we're able to bring hundreds of thousands of dollars back into the pockets of Newarkers, and then took the time to show them that instead of using check cashing places that will eat up large percentages, you can start investing in things. Our goal is to start with asset accumulation and help kids that are born in the city of Newark get bank accounts or IDAs in which they can build upon so that by the time they're 18, they have the money that they need to go to college, to start a business, or invest in a house.
When I'm mayor, you say, you're pretty sure you're going to win this time.
Well, we're not sure. We take nothing for granted. I'll leave this radio show and I'm going to be sprinting to the county building in Newark where the county executive is going to endorse us. And we're just every day working to create a consensus campaign and pull people into a larger vision of their community and a larger vision of America. Mm. This country should not be as great as we are. We should not be still dealing with challenges. In the United States of America right now, the average 17-year-old or senior in high school that's white is reading at a grade I'm sorry, 17-year-old senior in high school that's black or Latino is reading at a grade level that the average white American is. Here we are 54 years from Brown versus Board of Education, and we've still failed to heal the gap that exists between blacks and whites in this nation. So we have a lot to do as a country to live up to the promise and the hope of America. And it starts, the front lines of which are not necessarily down in Washington, the front lines of which are not in Senate houses. They really are within our inner cities where we need leadership. We need new ideas. We need to start working together to deal with these problems because America's greatest weakness will always be its failures to manifest itself in communities like this.
Cory Booker, we can hear that you've been on that campaign trail. It's very evident right there in your voice. A lot of listeners want to speak with you. Let me turn to Jeff calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
How you doing, Mr. Booker?
How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing fine, sir. I just want to sum it up in one quote. Victor Hugo, armies may be resisted, but nothing is better than an idea whose time has come. I got complete confidence you're going to win, and I cannot wait, sir, to write something about you as soon as you get that victory.
Jeff, does it mean or matter to you if Cory Booker becomes mayor of Newark, New Jersey or not?
Because, speaking on the phone, you know, it's hard to know where I come from, but I'm a military kid. My dad did 30 years in the military, and one place that I lived at that, you know, I think about the nice place, the Germantown, Philadelphia, used to be, and I'm sure Mr. Booker is well-versed, you know, in this part of Philly. Well, back when I was a young man, you know, in the early 70s, it was a nice place, even though it was still, you know, sort of impoverished area. You didn't have to worry about the crackheads. You didn't have to worry about the drug dealers, the gangbangers.
You think Cory Booker can change that?
I believe he could. I wish he was running for mayor in Germantown and all that, and I'm sure a lot of people out there would definitely concur with me.
Jeff, thanks very much for your call. Let's get one more right away. Anthony's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Anthony. You're on the air.
Yes, I applaud you, Mr. Booker. I'm so interested in seeing this new breed of young black leadership. You know, I live in Washington, D.C., and here we have a similar situation to the problem that you're facing with Sharp James. I'm sure you're well aware of Marion Barry and the sort of, politics that he runs. He's unbelievably unprogressive. He keeps playing the so-called insiders versus the outsiders, the rich versus the poor, black, white, things along those lines.
Anthony, do you think that's about to change? Is Cory Booker evidence of a change?
Well, Cory Booker is certainly evidence of a change, but I think what we need to see is a change in the constituency and a change in the mentalities of the constituency that allows themselves to continuously be used by these, you know, 60s era, you know, race politics playing type politicians.
Anthony, thanks very much for your call. Cory Booker, Anthony calls you, they're part of a new breed. What is that new breed? How do you define it? If I heard it right, in the documentary Street Fight, Jesse Jackson called you a wolf in sheep's clothing. Is that the old generation kicking the new?
No. Look, the first person I ever voted for in 1988 at Stanford University, I went to the bowling ball, pulled Jesse Jackson's lever. And I recognize that I'm not a generation that's different. I'm really a generation that's evolved out of the 60s leaders.
Why was he so tough on you then? Why call Cory Booker a wolf in sheep's clothing?
I think that you have a mayor that in Sharp James, who was there for 20 years, who every time that Jesse ran, he stepped out front for Jesse. Jesse's a loyal man and stayed loyal to the guy who was there for him. The reality is we've got to stop saying the new generation is really different and understand that the new generation stands on the shoulders of those who open doors to allow me to go to Stanford University, to allow me to get a law degree. So I am grateful and reverential to those people who opened up doors. I drank deeply from wells that I did not dig. The challenge for my generation, people call us the hip-hop generation, people call us the X generation. If you look at hip-hop music, we're innovators. We are people that take the old and mix it into the new and sample it and build upon it. And that's really what we're trying to do. You know, in my years in Newark, I've done everything from a hunger strike and sit-ins to marches. But I've also used my law degree to find out ways to take on slumlords and hold them accountable for what they're doing. I talk about the free market and the importance of understanding commerce and industry and starting black businesses and Latino businesses. So it's a mixture. I use technology all the time when I talk or even in my presentations to help people understand how we can use technology to leverage real social change. So I'm grateful from whence I've come, but the reality is I owe a debt to those people who got me here, and that debt is paid by taking everything they allowed me to get access to and using that to continue a struggle to make true on the promise of America. Langston Hughes said it, America never was America to me, but I swear this oath America will be. And that avowal is not a black avowal, not a civil rights avowal. It's an American avowal. We all have to be pledged to that.
Mark's calling from Saranac Lake, New York. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share a moment from an earlier campaign. It was 1998, and Mr. Booker's first race for the city council in Newark. And I was actually very privileged to be there on the election night when Mr. Booker's, excuse my nervousness, my first
time. No problem. He was 28, 29, then he must have been nervous too, or maybe not in Booker's case. What did you see, Mark?
Well, the person, the council member who Cory defeated came to his campaign headquarters to concede the race, and it was, in my way of thinking, being an observer of New Jersey politics, one of the dirtier campaigns I've ever witnessed in all of New Jersey urban politics, and you know, arguably even dirtier than the 2002 mayoral campaign.
And on that victory night?
And on that victory night, the crowd outside was really quite bitter against the competitor, and when he emerged, Cory emerged with him and admonished Cory admonished his own supporters not to be disrespectful of the loser and to, you know, show respect for his service to the city. And it was just a remarkable moment of grace and, you know, just generosity and victory, something that it's rarely seen in New Jersey.
That's a great snapshot from 1998. Mark, thanks for your call. Cory Booker,
thank you, Mark.
We hear that. And at the same time, you've been called naive and idealistic into the 2002 race. Have you toughened up? Are you tough leather underneath that idealistic exterior now?
You know, we've taken a lot of hits, and I definitely maybe have gotten a thicker skin, but this nation needs idealism. My city needs idealism. And if you want to call idealism naivete, then let it be that, because I draw greatest inspiration from high idealists, whether it's Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela. It's the idealists or the crazy dreamers that afforded for us by them seeing things that we couldn't, often us pessimistic, cynical people who could not see those things. It's those great dreamers that ensured us the better reality we're enjoying today. So I challenge people about their cynicism, and I think that that's in many ways what undermines apathy, cynicism, resignation to what the status quo is, what undermines our ability to achieve. And America is a nation that's been built upon bold dreamers with audacious views of what can happen and what's possible. You know, I've been in this city since I was a kid. I have a family history, and the city goes back for 50 years. My aunt and uncle have a dentist office, one of the first black dentist office in the South Ward. I've worked in inner cities all my life, from a teenager in East Palo Alto to a law student in East Harlem, and it's my focus and it's my passion. So,
but
I'm
you
happy
grew
to
up in an affluent New Jersey suburb, all white, but, essentially, except for you. You said, you know, my family was a few raisins in a tub of vanilla ice cream.
Well, you know, and that's a great story in and of itself. My parents are long-time civil rights activists. In 1969, after being turned away from white suburbs, they got a white couple to pose as them to go back to the places that turned them down and told them homes were sold or homes were taken off the market. And lo and behold, they were all still for sale.
They showed up just in time to sign the papers. And as I read it, the realtor took a swing at somebody here.
Yeah, I took a swing at the young lawyer who was representing my father and signed a dog on my dad. So my parents have been consistent fighters in the movement to make America live up to itself. And they taught my brother and I, it's sort of been pounded into our DNA, that we have to continue that struggle. So I'm happy to be a part of Newark's family, and I plan on being a part of that family for a long, long time.
But still, let me ask you, because you know it's easy to see these days, there is part of America's African-American population that's become very middle class, affluent. You know, your road, I mean, you worked hard for it, but it's been a very, very bright one. Golden boy is the phrase that traditionally would be described here. Stanford and Oxford and Yale Law School. Have you really gone into Newark and found that you can truly understand the what people are up against there and the way they see the world? Or are you, you know, the brother from another planet?
Well, I got my BA at Stanford, but the people of the city of Newark have been some of my greatest professors, and I feel like I got my PhD here on the streets. And I've lived in the neighborhood I've lived in now for over a decade. And people like the tenant president, Ms. Virginia Jones, has given me some of my life lessons. I remember when I first came up to her and said, I want to help you. She said, well, before you help me, you got to tell me what you see. And I said, well, I see the projects. I see a crack house, and describe the neighbor. She says, you can't help me. And I said, what are you talking about? And she goes, boy, you got to understand something. The world you see outside of you is a reflection of what you have inside of you. And if you're one of those people who only sees problems, that's all there's ever going to be. But if you see hope, opportunity, love in the face of God, then we can work together. And folks like that who've taken me under their wing, who've schooled me, as a great Mark Twain once said, I never confuse my education with my schooling. And the folks in this city who have seen me since I've been a very young man, still a student, and worked with me through my law career, through my political career, and now on the verge of becoming mayor, really know me, know what my heart is, and know what our focus is. And this can't be done alone. It's not about a golden boy riding in on a white horse solving problems. These problems are bigger than an individual, but they're not bigger than a collection of individuals. And we all have to pull together now and forget this divisiveness and pull together in our collective strength. Like the African saying says, sticks in a bundle can't be broken, or spider webs united could tie up a lion. And that's what we're trying to do in Newark, is unite people to focus on these issues that are still the enduring challenges of America.
Debbie's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Debbie. You're on the air.
Hi there, and thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Corey, I hear your message, and I love hearing it. I grew up in Newark. I grew up through the era of the riots. My mother grew up in Newark. My grandmother lived on Lake Street across the street from Branchbrook Park through that period. And I'm just so happy to hear that somebody cares about that city. Last summer, we drove down. My brother flew out from California, and we drove down with my mom. Oh, I live in Boston now, the Boston area. And we drove down. My aunt moved from Newark. Her husband was a police officer in Newark during the Admisio era.
Way back.
And we drove through, and I have to say, we weren't real happy with what we saw.
Debbie, let me ask you. Cory Booker sounds great. Do you think he can fix it?
I don't know, but I think it takes a person with vision. I think it takes leadership. I think it takes being able to, yes, I think it can be fixed. I think it takes giving people the belief that it can be fixed, offering the leadership and the vision and knowing that there's a leader that's going to take it there, I think can support people in making it happen.
There's the hope message. Debbie, we hear it, and we appreciate your call. I want to try and get to some more callers. Ray is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Ray, you're on the air.
Thank you. And, Corey, I am I'm turning 60, and I want you to know that you represent the success story of a whole people. On the agenda, on America's agenda today, is everyone is on its agenda today except the indigenous, urban, poor population. And Newark is a very progressive city, and the people there are not stupid. And if they are as sophisticated and intellectually astute as I view them, they will vote you and vote you in and support you. And may God bless you, and that to hear you, you articulate what in our coming generation, that clarity that is lost on a lot of us because of institutional racism.
Ray, I don't hear you begrudging Cory Booker's education and his articulate tongue. I hear you celebrating it.
From a people who education was denied.
Exactly.
We must never forget that.
And our greatest leaders were educators. These are people that created freedom schools and hid away to get an education. And people like W.B. Du Bois and people like Mary McLeod Bethune, these were great educators, Booker T. Washington.
Because institutional racism has made education so distasteful to these people whose ancestors had to fight for to get an education, we must look at the institutional racism as a root cause. Mm. And I want to end with this. Mm. I have a real issue with defining Americans in terms of black and white. Defining American people exacerbate and perpetuates institutional racism. Those calling themselves white are in actuality European Americans.
Mm.
And because we have 1 ounce of African blood in us, we are being defined as black. And when you see, we're intellectuals now. Let's recognize the power of words, okay? And when you go to the definition of white, it incorporates everything positive. When you go to the definition of black, it incorporates everything negative. And for the last 40 years, let's look at it. When we define ourselves according by these terms, black and white, you know, that has a lot to do with the disparity that exists today, and it has only occurred within the last 40 years.
Ray, we hear it, and we appreciate your call. Let us pick it up. Cory Booker, Barack Obama at the Democratic National Convention said famously, there's not a black America and white America and Latin America and Asian America. There's the United States of America. Ray is seconding that notion. Can politics move beyond race now, or is that lethal to a politician? You know, how do you ride that balance?
Well, it's important to understand that we are a united nation. We are a united country, and we all have vested interests, and there's no black justice or white justice. There is justice. But you cannot step away from owning up to the racial disparities that exist in America. You know, here in New Jersey, we're one of the worst states in the nation, if not the worst, in racial disparities in incarceration. Blacks are 12% of the population, but over 60% of the prison population. So we have to own up to that fact, and we can't hide from it or deny it, because to do so would undermine our ability to find solutions. And those solutions aren't always race-based solutions, but they create an urgency for us to create a society that is truly equal, where justice does overflow into everybody's cup.
But do you see black politicians moving beyond the color line? It certainly happened in entertainment. Barack Obama suggests it may happen on the political stage. Ray says, yes, please. What do you say?
I say that, look, that you have to in America if we're going to succeed. Cities themselves, from Los Angeles to San Antonio, they're not simple black-white communities. They are now cities that are deliciously mixed of all kind of races and religions coming together. So anybody who seeks to lead can't seek simply to lead within one narrow demographic. They have to have a broader appeal. And that's important because it's a uniting appeal to focus on problems. So I'm grateful. I spent last year in Ecuador, an intensive Spanish classes, because 40% of my city is from Latino descent. And to be able to give speeches now and interviews in Spanish, or more importantly, being able to connect to voters over the language barrier, is such an important thing. Mm. So I'm hoping that there is a new politics of America that's based upon inclusion and not narrow lines that people try to use often to divide us.
Tim is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Good to have you, Tim.
My issue is this, and is according to what he's saying is true. America always sing out race when there's an African American. Which one are we, a Negro, or which one are we, a black? We are so categorized, and I blame this administration for separating us more. What America needs is unity and people to trust each other and stop looking at people for the color of their skin and not their character. So this all boils down to, I'm glad he's running. There needs to be some Hispanics there, some Indians there. It doesn't matter. We're a country of diversity. So we need to get out of this black and white race. We're the most hated country on this globe now.
Tim, we hear it, and we thank you very much for your call. Let me get a call from Washington, D.C. Dawn is on the line. Hi, Dawn. You're on the air.
Hey. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, what you said about this whole issue of the Golden Boy and sort of Corey now being in national prominence, you know, makes me a little bit uncomfortable, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if white people, in fact, more than black people, are hungering for what is an acceptable type of black person, which is not to say Corey's not great, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but it's this idea of an Ivy League, apparently privileged black person who you can support. So a liberal can say, look, and you know, I'm about equality and about, you know, moving forward of the races, but you want someone like that. And I don't inherently have a problem with it, but I think it's important to think about. And I guess the analogy I would say, I went to an Ivy League law school, not his law school. Mm-hmm. I went to the law school. And when I was being interviewed, people always asked me, what does your father do for a living? You know, and, you know, what did your father do? Where are you from? And when I was able to say, well, you know, my dad's a doctor and I grew up in Scarsdale, people's eyes lit up. You had that sort of same thing, Brian Gumbel kind of effect. And suddenly I'm getting jobs that my colleagues in law school are just as qualified for in these firms, and they're not getting the callback.
Dawn, is this a very, in your case, what you're saying here, is it a very articulate way of saying what Sharp James's supporters said in 2002, that Cory Booker's not black enough?
No, it's not that he's not black enough. It's, in fact, just the opposite, because it doesn't bother people of color. It doesn't, well, I mean, Cory, you know, if you think about Sharp James, that's like Mayor Barry. At some point, you know, that's a certain kind of politician. Mm-hmm. And as a black person, that's not who I'm going to support. If I were Newark, I'm not voting for Sharp James. And I assure you, I was not voting for Mayor Barry. But the contrary is that you put in someone like Anthony Williams in D.C., who the white population supports. So it really doesn't go to this idea, I guess, in a sort of an us against them. Well, if the white people like him, we ought not like him.
Mm-hmm.
Barry in politics for a long time, so it's crazy. No one thought Barry was good, but we're for him because we're against him.
Dawn, our time is running down, but you've said something very interesting here. Cory Booker, how do you respond? You know what she's talking about.
Well,
how
I agree with what she's talking about. There's a problem with racial essentialism, whether it comes from people like Sharp James, who try to define what blackness is, or whether it comes from the larger communities trying to define what the acceptable blackness is. I really try not to get caught up in that. I do have a city that's 54% African American, but I'm really trying to focus on real issues and challenges and problems and talk to people about practical steps that we all can take. I'm trying really to get people to focus beyond narrow racial reasoning or narrow racial essentialism and look to the larger issues. My acceptability to my voters, which is a majority black city, will be based not upon the kind of things that Sharp James says or a larger public says, but what kind of things that they feel. Can Cory Booker make a difference? Can he make my streets safer, my public schools stronger, and help me better participate in a larger and and growing economy and a global economy. So ultimately, it all cuts through that. What families want is they want their lives to be empowered. And what black families want in Newark is very similar to what Latino families want in Newark, very similar to what people want in other communities around this nation. So that's what we need leaders to be focusing on, most importantly. And let all the other racial spectators who want to focus on race in ways that are the detriment of our larger issues become silent as they witness the wonderful things that are happening in communities like mine.
We just got a couple of minutes left. What can you, if you win, and it looks like you may very well, what can you do at the local level, at the Newark level, to take on these giant problems, which, as you say, are global?
Right. Absolutely. And it's getting our city really focused on economic participation. It's working with young, dynamic entrepreneurs like we have in our campaign, giving them the support they need to deal with everything from practical bonding requirements or technical training to make sure that they can start businesses and get into this economy and also employ people from within the neighborhoods. It's working with high school students to make sure that they're getting skills in the carpentry trades and the other trades that are now booming in a state like New Jersey that continues to build and build. It's about making sure that on every level we do use modern technology and things like CityStat to push down crime so children feel safe as they walk to and from school. It's about taking housing and using and tax incentives and the like to produce low-income housing and more ownership amongst housing for people that live in our community so they can begin to get a stake in the American dream. It's not one solution. It's a practical step after a practical step of moving our city forward. And I guarantee that people will be amazed if we can all come together around those practical solutions that have a spiritual basis in terms of our ideals. We can make tremendous progress.
We've just got a couple of seconds here. You're 36 now. Are you committed to a life in politics?
I'm not. I'm committed to a life fighting for social justice and for change in my nation that has given me so much. I want to live a life giving back.
Mm. Cory Booker, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Cory Booker, current front runner in the mayor's race in Newark, New Jersey. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.